Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Captain L Hunter's podcast. This is your boy Big L, Captain L Hunter, aka L Boogie. I want to thank you all for taking this ride along with me again. Got another great episode coming along at you. We're going to be talking about some good things, implicit bias. Now, I know we haven't talked about this as a country nationally since about 2016 with the last election, but we're going to talk about it a little bit today. I think it's important just to keep some things fresh and review and go over some things. Stay tuned, go along with the ride with me. And I appreciate you guys, and I hope that you guys are appreciating and enjoying the podcast. Once again, if you guys want to be a guest on the podcast, if you want to hear my perspective on a particular topic, don't forget to hit me up at my email, hunterpoliceconsulting@gmail.com, hunterpoliceconsulting@gmail.com. While I'm talking about this, let me just also just pause for a moment, just continue to advertise my business, hunterpolicetraining.com. That's my website, hunterpolicetraining.com. If you have an opportunity for advancement on your job, particularly if you are having a testing process coming up for promotional opportunities, then I'm your man. I can help you with those promotional opportunities. I can put you through the full ringer of a full testing experience. I can also put you through individuals. If you struggle with the written, we can just talk about that. If you struggle with the oral presentation portion of a test, can put you through that. If you are struggling with any of those particular things, let me know. I will have some new services coming up very, very shortly. We're going to be entering into the firearms, helping people get their pistol permits. That should be coming up very shortly. Also, some other things are going to be coming up very shortly as well. I'll announce those as the time gets closer. So I appreciate if you guys hit me up on my website, look at my blogs, read them over. Let me know what you think. Leave a comment. Don't be afraid to like it, or if you don't like it, hey, it is what it is. But I would like to hear your feedback concerning the podcast, because I want to know what you guys think, and I want to make this podcast better, and I want to give out some real good information. HunterPoliceConsulting@gmail.com. HunterPoliceTraining.com is the email. That's it for that. Let's go. Let's talk about implicit bias. Now, a lot of people think that they understand what implicit bias is. And I think that all that's been done within the last few years talking about it, I think that there probably is a lot of understanding that has gone forth. But I think also that it's important to keep some things relevant and continue. Now, everyone thinks that when you talk about implicit bias, that you're talking about simply about race. And that's just not the case. Now, I taught this subject at our Waterbury Police Academy for a number of years, and it's not simply about race. One of the biggest aspects about implicit bias, people, number one, have them about a number of different things, and we tend to unconsciously and systematically place people in groups and judge them and stereotype them according to some idealized preconceived notions about different people and about different things. And it's not only about race, right? So one of the biggest things I always talked about when I was teaching the class is that people have implicit biases or unconscious biases. I'm going to be using those words and terms interchangeably. But we have these biases in which we do not know against people who may be short. We may have them in the positive for people who are taller. We will have them against people who are ugly and favor those who are pretty. Those who are, we think, who have a certain academic level of achievement, and on and on and on and on. So it's not simply about race. This becomes important when we talk about policing, because we want fair and impartial policing. In fact, a company that came in to the state of Connecticut and trained myself as well as a number of different officers from around the state concerning unconscious bias, it was a company called Fair and Impartial Policing. It's, I believe they're out of Florida. You can look it up, fnipolicing.com, fairandimpartialpolicing.com. So anyway, so these people trained us. I'm obviously not going to talk about a number of things that they talked about, because they're an LLC and they have their own private company and everything like that. But I am going to talk about what is important to us and to our understanding about what's going on and how that relates to the police world. And what is important, and what I am going to talk about, is how police officers deal with and handle implicit bias. And I think that that's important, because we don't want officers out here giving tickets to those who are less attractive, giving tickets to those who are short, giving tickets to those who are on a certain outgroup, or who are those who are looked upon less favorably than the group of the population, right? We all understand the outrage that's currently going on with the college scandals. And those people of elite status, rich people, actors, so on and so on, who are buying their way into certain colleges. So if we have a problem with that, then we also should have a problem with police officers who are unconsciously, let me make sure we stress that, this is an unconscious decision based on a number of factors that they may not realize is going on. So we don't want them doing that. Now, the difference between implicit bias or unconscious bias and obviously conscious bias is that if you ask anyone about any type of situation, right? If you ask them about how they feel about gay people, or short people, or black people, or Hispanic people, or Asian people, or white people, or those who are mentally challenged, you name the group or the category of people that they may have a conscious feelings towards any group of people, then more than likely you will get a response from decent people that is favorable, right? They will not have problems with gay people. They will not have problems, or they would say something like, you know, I don't see color, or something along those lines, right? Those are positive responses. However, in their actions, in their day-to-day goings in and out, you would realize and recognize that, okay, maybe they do have a problem and maybe they don't realize it. Now, obviously, to contrast that with the explicit bias, right? And these are the people from Charlottesville. These are the people in the Ku Klux Klan. These are Nazis. These are black people who have some extreme animus and hostility towards white people or Jewish people, or, you know, you name the group or ethnicity that one group would have some problem with another group. You insert your own labels in there. So I think that it's important that we talk about that. But we're not going to deal with explicit bias. We can deal with that another time, if that's even worth really exploring. But if we want to have fair and impartial policing, if you ask police officers how they feel about a certain group of population because they're sworn to take an oath, because they have taken an oath and are sworn to uphold the constitutions of their particular state as well as United States of America, then you will understand that they should be held to that particular level. We can't have people lying about their oath. And once again, I'm saying that they're not lying. I'm saying that what's going on is unconscious. And the purpose of the training that we're going to talk about today and that I went through and that I put people through is that so they can become aware of it. It's not to call people racist. It's not to imply that all police officers are racist, as was implied when Hillary Clinton talked about this issue in 2016, and when she said that all people have some type of conscious bias. Everyone has it. You know, let's just pause for effect and just think about it. Think about what you really think about people who are obese. What do you really think about people who are short? What do you really think about people who are tall? Are you more favorable towards them? And that's all it is. But that's all that we're talking about, is your favorability towards these people and towards these particular groups of people. Now, you can have a favorableness or favorability towards these people. That's fine. But in your treatment as a professional, than every profession that you are in, you should be treating these people with the same level of professionalism, period, full stop. Other companies, numerous other industries and other companies, deal with this idea of implicit bias. Implicit bias training has been going on for a number of years, and numerous companies are doing it. Google has done it. Microsoft has done it. Procter & Gamble has done it. Coca-Cola has done it with their employees. It has been working for a number of years now into the police world. So police officers can understand that you are more than likely operating under the understanding they have their prejudices and that they have their quirks and things like that. So police officers are also receiving this training and understanding that they have these same biases and everything else like that. And so that we need to keep those biases in check. This training has been given to teachers and those into the medical field. This is an article that was written for a particular medical magazine. Critical Care Nurse is the name of the magazine. Talks about implicit bias or unconscious bias refers to positive or negative attitudes or stereotypes activated automatically and involuntarily that influence our understanding, decisions, and behaviors without our awareness or voluntary control. That is the definition that was given a little bit further down in this particular article. It talks about the overview of the problem and the patients most at risk. The patients most at risk for receiving less than the current standard of care because of unconscious bias can be distinguished by broad features such as age, gender, and race, right? So it's not just about race. Many people will have biases against people's genders. Others will have it because of people's age. You may favor those who are younger rather than older. More specifically, patients with any of the following attributes have cause for concern whether they will receive the current standard of care for their health problems: female gender, advanced age, non-white race, low socioeconomic status, non-English speaking, non-heterosexual, disabled, obese, mentally ill, AIDS, and drug addiction. So if you have one of those particular issues, then your risk of receiving less than the standard of care increases. This was an article that was written in this magazine for critical care nurses to bring this to their attention. As we can see, this implicit bias, this unconscious bias is being addressed in a number of different fields. Teachers and school administrators have also received this type of training so that they understand that any type of discipline needs to be fair and across the board. We cannot give children disparate punishments for the same acts. Every child in a school needs to be disciplined similarly, obviously within in accordance with their own personal history and background. That's what it is. So school administrators are getting it, teachers are getting it, law enforcement officials are getting it, the medical field is getting it. That is that article from that Critical Care Nurse editorial. That editorial was written in 2018, fairly recently. This is still being addressed, right? So you think that if anyone who thinks that this situation has been addressed, here's a magazine that was just written last year, an article from a magazine that was just written last year, showing and implying that this is still a problem. So we need to continue to talk about it. So it's not just me just talking about it because I have nothing else to talk about. I'm talking about it because I think that it's important. So if the nursing field in the medical field is addressing this situation, saying that if you have people who have AIDS or advanced age, non-English speaking, and all these other factors to them are receiving less than a standard of care, then the police officers need to recognize that we need to receive the same standard of care as well. So let's continue to move on and let's look at some other studies about what it is. And so I read from that magazine, which gave a very good definition of implicit bias. And let me continue on and read again from another source and give a similar definition. Implicit bias is the attitudes or stereotypes that affect our understanding, actions, and decision in an unconscious manner, activated involuntarily without awareness or intentional control, can either be positive or negative. Everyone is susceptible. So those are, once again, those are the definitions. The Journal of Personality and Social Psychology from 2014, they published a study in which 176 mostly white male officers shown pictures of course, black people. They were shown pictures of animals, big cats and things like that. And they found that there was a tendency to dehumanize the black people. When they found out that, however, they conducted the study, they found out that they had a propensity to use force on children more often in custody. The same studies found out that there were 264 mostly white female college students, and they, when they looked at images of children, they found particularly those who are age 10 and under, they had a sense of innocence. They thought there was a sense of innocence about these children. If the children, particularly white children, now they looked at black children, same ages, 10 and less, they did not have the same empathetic or sense of innocence towards those black children. There's this tendency to think that black people or black children are older. And this becomes a problem, you know, if you think about the Tamir Rice shooting. Police officers obviously get a call that there's a child playing in the park. He may be seen as older and so on and so on. So this is a problem which has been documented well before, and this Journal of Personality and Social Psychology from 2014 continues with that. In 2015, there was a multi-level Bayesian analysis of racial bias in police shootings at the county level, and they looked at counties level shootings from 2011 through 2014. And what they found was that there was no relationship between the county levels of police shootings of individuals and the crime rate. So essentially what that means is that there were more police shootings than was actually reflected in the crime rates. If the analysis is that there is a uptick in crime, certain populations are committing more crimes, then maybe those people can be viewed as more dangerous and have the potential of danger. But that particular 2015 study conducted by Cody Ross showed that correlation just didn't match. So even though the crime level was at a certain point, the police shootings had exceeded that crime level. And so I have to take a look and just understand why that was going on. 2015 as well, the Boulder, Colorado University of Colorado at Boulder conducted a video game simulation, and they found that black people were actually being shot sooner. When I teach the class, you know, we went over a study from that's pretty old now, 2002, in which subjects looked at a frame by frame appearing of a picture, if you can imagine this, right? So a picture is slowly being materialized before your eyes. You had to determine whether that item was a threat or was it not a threat, right? Was it a threatening object like a gun or a knife, or was it a non-threatening object like a paper towels or flowers or something like along those lines? What they found is that if they did not prime the subject of the test. For example, by priming, I mean, but putting a picture of an individual before they actually put the pictures up that they're framing slowly and materializing before their face. If they primed the individual, for example, if they primed the individual with a black face and then they slowly materialized an object, for example, a gun, then they would associate the black face and the gun and they were able to pick out and say it was a gun much sooner. Same study, if they primed the individual with a white face and then a gun, then it would take longer because there was a disassociation between white face and actually being a potential threat to people. And what this means is that this is very dangerous for the officer because it would show that they not taking the white face as threatening, and they were slower to act and to react to a potential threat. There was no priming either the non-dangerous instrument or a dangerous instrument, then if there was no priming, no faces put before them, then that it was equal time in them being able to pick out a flower pot or being able to pick out a knife. Priming of the face is what really caused there to be either a lag or an increase in their time and in the ability to pick out whether the object was good or bad. So I hope that you guys can follow that and understand what I'm saying. So this is very dangerous from the officer's standpoint. Now I want to read to you from implicit bias versus the Ferguson effect. And I'm going to read quite a bit of part of this. This is from policechiefmagazine.org, Police Chief, February 2016. Implicit bias versus the Ferguson effect. Psychological factors impacting officers' decision to use force. Read just a little bit of this to you. Follow along with a key issue facing the police profession today is the allegation of racial bias in the use of force. This long-standing issue was placed in the forefront of events in Ferguson, Missouri in 2014, and the concern on the part of many community members has been reinforced and bolstered through the accumulating effect of media coverage of police shooting incidents throughout the year that followed. This debate occurs as the police profession, other professions, right, talk about the medical and teachers and all that, and the public learn about the science of bias, including implicit bias. Theory and research from psychologists who study human bias help with understanding the various psychological and as well as sociological forces that might impact police decisions to shoot or not shoot. Three lines of research shed light on these forces. Together, these studies identify several factors that might impact an officer's decision to shoot, factors that might produce or eliminate differential responses to black and white subjects. The three important groups of studies follow these statements. Statement number one. Police professionals may use more force or be quicker to use force against blacks because, like many humans, they have a black crime implicit bias producing greater perception of the threats from blacks than from people of other races, right? This is why in that 2002 study I'm talking about that when they primed the black face and then slowly materialized a dangerous instrument, that they were able to pick out the dangerous instrument quicker. The second statement, the above phenomenon, talking about blacks being associated with crime, can be countered by high-quality use of force training. High-quality use of force training. So what we're talking about here is in the training that people are getting, this is part of the high-quality use of force training. This implicit and unconscious bias training that people receive, you can understand it, and then you take that training to the training field, use of force, understanding that you should not be associating these things so we can unlearn these types of habits. Third, police professionals may use less force or be slower to use force against blacks, possibly putting the officers in danger out of concern for social and legal consequences associated with shooting racial and ethnic minorities. So what this is, this seems to be countering the other one, right? In one study, it'll show that they are actually quicker to use force. But because of the sociological implications, because of news media, because of viral videos, because of threats of lawsuits, and because of threats of prosecutions, now they're finding out that police officers are actually slower to use force against black people. And this, of course, can be a dangerous effect because officers now could be putting themselves at danger as well as the public. So from 2002, we saw that study where they're quicker to react. Now it's turning around where they may be slower to react. Now we want our police officers to be safe. Let me be very clear about that. I want my police officers to go home safely, and I want them to use the right amount of force or the right amount of time. And so that this is what we have to deal with. Two general explanations have been put forth to explain this overrepresentation of racial and ethnic minorities among people with whom police intervene. Some have argued the patterns of racial disparity are consistent with racial minority groups' involvement in criminal behavior and resistance to police intervention. People are just getting what they deserve, essentially. Stop resisting, stop running, you won't get hurt. This is what the argument is. Consistent with this argument, racial and ethnic minorities are disproportionately on the receiving end of police enforcement actions because of the relatively greater involvement in criminal activity. In the case of force, in particular, the argument is that greater force is used against racial and ethnic minorities because of this disproportionate criminal involvement and greater subject to resistance for police. So this is what some of the arguments are, right? So the argument is from some people that if you stop resisting, number one, if you stop committing crimes, number two, stop resisting, then you bring these things upon yourself. Last thing I'm going to read, because I don't want to bore you guys with all this reading, is the first line of research on the black crime implicit bias indicates that officers' implicit biases can produce a greater tendency to use force against black subjects compared to, for instance, white subjects. The good news from a second line of studies is that high-quality use of force training seems to be able to reduce the impact of human biases on police use of force. A third line of research brings an additional factor to light that might impact police officers' decisions. A socio-political atmosphere that threatens grave consequences for police officers shoot black suspects regardless of their reasonableness of shooting. I'll stop reading right there. But what I really want to emphasize is the high quality training. What we're talking about here, if you pay attention to this, if you are a police officer and you receive this implicit bias training, as well as firearms training, talking about these types of things of firearms training, then you can reduce incidents of force. And when you're dealing on the street, then you can be well aware and cognizant of how much force you can use. And you can step back and say, hey, listen, I'm not going to use any more force. There have been other studies called counter bias and political correctness type of trainings. In these trainings, they've shown that there's hesitation. Actors using foul language, white actors using foul language, they had the same demeanor. They had the same mannerisms, same levels of resistance. And that is called counter bias training, right? And they've shown that when white people are put in these same positions, then the officers are actually slower to act and slower to respond to those threats, slower to respond to their foul language, slower to respond, even though they're wearing the same things, talking the same way, same level of resistance, same level of hesitancy to follow commands. If the actor was white, then the officer took a longer time. But if he was black, then they can see for themselves and be shown the videos and things that and show that they actually have some type of unconscious bias. Once again, I'm talking about unconscious bias and things that they don't understand that they're going through and dealing with. And this also comes from reports. Let me just read a little bit more from Police Chief Magazine, February 2016. Recent research has produced findings that raise the possibility atmosphere surrounding police and use of force against minority may actually lead officers to hesitate when facing a threatening black subject, therefore putting themselves in danger. These studies use state-of-the-art techniques that improve upon the traditional shoot-don't-shoot methods that have been criticized for bearing little resemblance to real-life officers. The researchers address the limitations of the original shoot-don't-shoot button, putting police departments in state-of-the-art facilities, simulators similar to those used by law enforcement agencies. 60 realistic high-definition deadly use of force scenarios were developed based on 30 years of official officer-involved shootings. The scenarios were filmed using professional actors to play the roles of suspects and other people. They were playing crime victims and witnesses in real-world settings. Some of the filmed scenarios depict suspects who are armed with deadly weapons, while in others the suspects hold innocuous objects such as wallets and cell phones, and thus present no threat. The dynamic, interactive, life-size video scenarios using these simulators were made to capture the complexity and emotional context of deadly encounters while maximizing experimental control. Subjects' race varied in all scenarios. All other variables within a scenario, in other words, their demeanor, use of foul language, proximity, clothing style, physical size, location and speed, and subtlety of movement were controlled, ensuring that any variation in participant decision was based on a suspect's race. This is between 2012-2013 in Spokane, Washington Police Department. And it says that contrary to the results in the first line of the studies described above, the experiments found that the subjects took significantly longer to shoot armed black suspects than white suspects in deadly force scenarios. So depending on what study we're reading and going by, in many instances, blacks, as I mentioned before, black suspects are actually being taken longer to be shot. And this may actually present a problem for the police officers. And it is because that they are thinking about so many other ideas. And this becomes obviously dangerous for people. In August 7, 2015, in Birmingham, Alabama, a detective was pistol-whipped and knocked unconscious by a black subject whom he had pulled over. When he was interviewed about it and why he did not respond with the appropriate level of force, he said a lot of officers are being too cautious because of what's going on in the media. I hesitated because I didn't want to be in the media like I am right now. His attempt to not be in the media for making rash decisions and for ignoring what he would perceive probably as overboard actually caused him to be knocked out, and he was in the media anyway. So my point is that can't hesitate as officers. You have to really kind of look at the threat, look at the dynamic of the threat. When you talk about these simulators, we were fortunate enough in the Waterbury Police Department to go through a type of training called Blue Line Training, in which we were placed in these life-sized simulators, and we had to make shoot, don't shoot decisions. You got to really see, you know, how quickly a situation evolved. You got to see, you know, whether our decision to shoot live fire scenario was correct or not. We got a chance to talk about it. We also got to see how our emotions were affected and how well our shots were placed. So it was really, really excellent training. I think that every police department that should be part of the firearms training every year is to be placed in some type of scenario that changes from year to year, so it doesn't become boring and predictable, obviously. You can see what it's like to be placed in different scenarios, and maybe the decisions every single time is not to shoot. Maybe sometimes it's to shoot every single time. So we can be placing these types of things. Like I said, the research is saying that real good training, use of force training, can eliminate this type of bias. So my contention is always to bring the fact that everyone is susceptible to bias to people's forefront. When I always taught the class, I always said, listen, we're all human beings, and we all have prejudices. We all have this in-group, out-group mentality. And it's our job as police officers in this multi-racial, multi-ethnic country to deal with that and not to place people into boxes and to think that everyone of every other group is bad, everyone in every other group is good, and everyone who's tall and or female or male or whatever is going to hurt you. When I taught the class, I had one recruit ask me if I had ever been in a situation in which I used unconscious bias. Now, I'm sure that in my 24 years, particularly when I was a street officer, of course, I'm sure that I could. But one thing, I'm sure that I did use some type of unconscious or implicit bias. But one thing that really stands out to me, and I really thought about it, is, and I can't remember if I was actually a patrol officer at the time or if I was a new sergeant. I think I was actually a patrol officer about to be promoted to sergeant. We get a call one night of a stolen car that had speeding through town and had just crashed. Now, when we got the call over the radio, we were within seconds. We were literally around the corner. So we pull around the corner. As we pull up, we see three males getting out of the car, and they're about to bail out. So we draw down on them. They tell them to get on the ground. They all comply. We didn't have to chase them. And there were other officers coming too. So there was no way that they realized that we were the first two officers there. They heard the sirens, and they knew that everyone else was coming. There was no point in running. So they just got down on the ground. Now, what was interesting about this is because we see three males, we get them all on the ground. And as we're about to go in and start handcuffing them or everything like that, I noticed to my left that there's a girl standing in the middle of the street. There's a black female standing in the middle of the street. And I'm thinking to myself, why is this girl standing here? Well, it took a while for it to dawn on us that this girl was also in the car. Now, we're telling the guys, we got all of our attention, all the other officers, as well as myself, the other officers obviously arrived within seconds. Everyone's attention was immediately upon the males. We get them on the ground. We get them handcuffed. We want to start looking in the car, making sure that obviously no one else is hurt because the car had crashed. And we want to make sure that, see if there's any contraband weapons, things like that. But it never really dawned on us to deal with this female. That was an example of all of our collective implicit biases not concentrating on this female. We thought that the crime, that there's a pro-male crime bias, right? Males commit more crime. But this female was also in the car. So once the rest of us recognized that this female was in the car, then we got her down on the ground as well. You know, we're not going to discriminate at that point. And then we cuffed her, and, you know, I think a female officer showed up. I can't really remember. But that was a prime example. Why is it a prime example? Because we were so concentrated on the males that this female, who none of us paid any attention to, could have pulled a gun on us and then shot all of us dead, and then he could have got back in the car and ran up and drove off. So that is a prime example of when this unconscious bias that we all had towards males committing crimes, that we never addressed and never looked to the female who was also in the stolen car. So this problem, it's a problem because we live in a multiracial, multi-ethnic society. It's a problem because we don't want our teachers treating people differently. We don't want our medical professionals treating people differently. We don't want judges and prosecutors treating people differently and handing out disproportionate sentences. And so that's a problem. And it's a problem even for black officers. Vox, VictorOceanXray.com, wrote an article back in 2016, how systematic racism entangles all police officers, even black cops. They interview a black officer, and he's going through when he drove through the city where he was working at, and he saw someone who was sagging pants and things like that. He thought that he was up to no good or had the potential for being up to no good. And let's just be honest, there were times when I drove through my own neighborhood and saw people and thought that maybe they were also up to no good. This problem affects everyone. The American society that we live in, and let me just talk a little bit about that before we wrap this up. The American society that we live in has been fueled and built upon this thought process that Black people are criminals and that we have this certain place in the sociological hierarchy of this country, and that is on the bottom. And so therefore we think that if there is a Black person who has any little bit of money, or they look a certain way, or they dress a certain way, then that they are a certain way. And I think that that is one of the most dangerous things. I am no longer a police officer, obviously. I will now have a full beard. Sometimes I wear a beanie hat. Sometimes I wear baseball caps, but I'm a former police captain. Maybe people can't tell that by the way that I look or the way that I dress. Now I don't sag my pants or anything like that, but maybe I do not look the part that I once did before, but that doesn't mean I'm any less educated. Doesn't mean that I'm any less of a positive male role model. Happily married for a number of years now. I've raised my children. My children are in their 20s. They're all successful. One has graduated from college. One is in college. Actually, the other two are in college. So this is what I have been able to produce. So you can't judge a book by its cover. And I think that the influence of the media and social media, and particularly with all of the influence of the media and social media and influence of commercials throughout the years has really cemented within the American psyche the problems of implicit bias and the problems of associating certain people with certain crimes. We go back even to the 1954-55 decisions to desegregate school. We look at the Dahl tests that were done, and even students then, and that Dahl test that was done, you guys can look this up, the Dahl test that was done has been replicated numerous times, and you can watch it on YouTube. I think Anderson Cooper has a video on YouTube when he deals with the Dahl test, and they're asking students, little children, 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, which doll is ugly, which doll is pretty, which doll would you want to be friends with, which doll would make a good student, things like that. Fortunately, that is changing. And you can see as the videos get newer and newer, that is more recent, that some students are actually saying, I don't care which student looking at the dolls, I don't care which student is what I would be friends with. I don't care which student is or which doll is. I would be friends with all dolls. I would play with all dolls. Every doll is prettier. So I think that we are becoming less racist overtly and explicitly as far as that context is concerned. But I still think that implicit bias is still there. We should still talk about it. We should still have trainings on it. Medical field, the legal field, police field, the teaching administrative field, we should all deal with it and talk about it from time to time, which is why I'm bringing it up now. But I do think that we're making great strides, and I applaud all members of society in this United States that we're making great strides to do better. Police are doing better. Teachers are doing better. The medical field is doing better. Everyone's doing better. And it's working and affecting the children that they are saying, hey, listen, both the dolls are smart. Both dolls are pretty. Doesn't matter the skin tone or skin color. It is working. If you watch a number of YouTube videos, you will see some children are actually saying that it doesn't really matter. So what can you do? I'm going to finish this up by saying, what can we do? What can we do? We can continue to have training. Police officers continue to go to training. If you're dedicated to treating people fairly and honestly, take that particular type of training seriously. If you have not had that training, look it up for yourself. Read some different articles. If I point out a number today, continue to look at YouTube, own your own implicit bias training. Go to your department and ask management team if you can bring in some people who could provide us with this training. I am available. I cannot teach on the fair and partial policing, but I can certainly talk about it. I've talked about it before to do this type of training. I think that it is important. I think it's worthwhile. As we said, and as we looked at the numbers, it is working. There's been numerous studies saying that this implicit bias training is actually working. It is actually effective. Officers are learning what they're doing. Couple this with the use of force training, then it is working and it is effective. So what can we do? Continue to have this training. If you're a mid-manager, encourage it to be done. If you're a patrol officer, encourage it to be done. If you're a citizen, asked if your police officers have had this particular type of training. If not, encourage them to do so. Find out some people who are qualified to train. Hint, hint. Find out some people who are qualified to train and see what their credentials are and make sure that they are up to speed and make sure that they can come in and do this type of training. I think that it only benefits everyone. And like I said, it doesn't just benefit the Black-white relationship or dynamic. It benefits every single aspect of society. We don't want police officers giving tickets to those people who are short. We don't want police officers who have a gender bias. We don't want police officers who have an age bias. We don't want police officers who have a bias against people who are obese and therefore they're ticketing more these type of people. It's not simply a Black-white issue. We have these issues and biases racist about a number of different things. So you don't want police officers treating people who are unfairly, who are on drugs. Everyone who deserves a shot and everyone deserves to be treated fairly in our society. So stop thinking it's just simply black and white. While I talked mostly about black and white, yes, as far as racial, but there are other dynamics in which people are affected by this particular phenomenon. There you have it, everyone. I hope you guys enjoyed this podcast. Write me back. Let me know what's going on. If you like it, if you don't like it, or something you wanted me to address in the future, if there's something I missed in today's episode, leave a comment. Let me know what you think. HunterPoliceConsulting@gmail.com. And I'm also changing my email address within a few weeks to HunterPoliceTraining.com. HunterPoliceTraining@gmail.com. That is already up and running. So HunterPoliceConsulting@gmail.com. HunterPoliceTraining@gmail.com. HunterPoliceTraining. This is why I'm changing it. Everything. HunterPoliceTraining.com is the website. Go to it, read my blogs, check out my services. I am available to help people score high in those promotional tests and increase your chances to get that promotion that you want. Once again, it's not just for police officers, it's for correctional officers, sheriffs, fire officers, military personnel, even civilians who have some type of test that they want to go for and some type of oral presentation. I can put you through an oral presentation or take a look at the video. I do videotape it. We can take a look at it and see, you know, where you need to change. We can do it through Skype or some other video conferencing method. And so we can see you can see what you're doing right and what you're doing wrong. That's it for now, ladies and gentlemen. I appreciate you guys tuning in. Guys, police officers, my brothers and sisters, please stay safe. And to all of you all, take care.